Hawaii experiences little of the self-described alt-right, but the recent events in Charlottesville and President Trump's response evoke strong reactions here, too. As the alt-right becomes a more visible and active part of American politics, one of their goals seems to be a making over of the GOP in the alt-right's image. But at this stage, what is the alt-right, and what do its supporters believe? And how likely is it to affect politics in future? Some very recent research has some answers to that. Contributing editor Neil Milner reviewed it, and he's here to give us a look. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Bethann.
So one of these pieces of research that you looked at is only a few weeks old. It's only been out for a couple of weeks. What did these researchers find, and where are they from?
Well, the one that looked at a psychological profile, a very thorough psychological study using a lot of the usual stuff, it's from Patrick Forsher at the University of Arkansas and Noor Kateli from Northwestern University. What they did was to identify very carefully, people would self-identify as alt-right members of the alt-right. They would very carefully check whether that was that category made sense to these people. They found 400 people who were identified with the alt-right roughly, and they took those people and compared them to 300 people who are not alt-right members. And they found out a pretty clear, compelling psychological profile of what members of the alt-right are like. And the first thing to understand about it is that even though we regularly now talk about implicit bias, there's a lot of research that says we're all biased, our eyes blink in certain ways, we don't know it. They want to make sure you understand this is explicit, this is extrinsic bias. They reflect a kind of set of behavior and attitudes that is right out there. They express prejudice. They see whites as victimized. They don't approve of any kind of Black Lives Matter movement. They're much more likely to harass people. They have behavior that harasses people on the basis of race, and they tend to dehumanize other groups that are different from them. This is compared to the other sample. They're just much more likely to express in a positive way the fact that they're prejudiced, the fact that they're whites, and they feel that they're being taken advantage of.
Okay, so that's one study. What about the other one?
Well, the other study took a look at the literature that's written on websites and so on to look at what these people really want to do rather than a psychological profile. And what they found out, more about strategies and what they want to find out, they found out two things that are very interesting, one of which did not surprise me and the other surprised me a little bit more. The one that did not surprise me is that the modern alt-right tends to talk in the same language of rights and discrimination that the civil rights movement did, only now they see themselves as victimized. They see themselves as being as white people being deprived of rights because of people of color who are getting all the advantages. And they also talk in terms of multiculturalism, which simply says, hey, multiculturalism should include us white people also. That result didn't surprise me because I know how rights language tends to work, and this has been in other places. The more interesting one is that a lot of this literature is very clear that what they want to do is to racialize the Republican Party. Their goal is essentially, and this shows up in a lot of the literature, is to make this kind of alt-right basis the basis of the Republican Party.
When you put both of those studies together, what is the profile of the person who is an alt-right, and what does that alt-right mean now? That phrase has been bandied about for quite a while since, you know, we had the election, and there's been a lot of cautions, especially from the AP, about using that and what that really means, because it's still so fuzzy. When you now have a psychological profile of someone who is self-described alt-right and also a body of white supremacist literature that appeals to them, what does that mean for the rest of us?
Well, the first thing is just a word of caution on the basis of what you just said. Alt-right, like all kinds of terms that become political terms, they get thrown around and they become accusatory and not very analytical. But generally what alt-right meant to the people who studied it here is that these people were they basically overall tended to be either white supremacist or populist in the sense of not liking elites and so on. Both of those groups tended to be very white nationalistic. White supremacy means just that. You tend to see the white people as supreme. It's a rough coalition, and it's very hard to identify any kind of specific sort of way now, but we have to remember that Charlottesville organized protest, not the counter-protest, the protest that the alt-right had something to do with, was an attempt to take all of these groups and to begin to build a coalition from the KKK to anti-Semites to others. So there is clearly that kind of movement. Like anything else, it's inchoate, it's in flux. But that generally is what the alt-right means.
You spoke a moment ago about trying to, racialize the Republican Party, and we've been seeing these attempts to make over the GOP in an alt-right image. What does that really look like? How do you racialize the Republican Party when it's so factionalized?
Well, that's the idea of racializing the Republican Party to make white supremacy and even white nationalism the key issue is a pretty big dream for now. But we have to remember certain things about race and certain things about white people and certain things about Republicans that have been around for a long time. First of all, race played a very important issue in the 2016 election. That racial resentment shows up, that white resentment shows up as one of the key factors that predicted whether they were going to vote for Trump. But there's a broader history than that. The parties are really divided to a great extent on the basis of race in terms of the way they vote. The majority of white people vote Republican, and a heavy majority of people of color vote Democratic. So you have this kind of racialization of politics already. I'm not saying that that's at all like what the white alt-right would like down the road, or especially what the white supremacists would like down the road. But there clearly is a movement toward bringing alt-right, white supremacy, white identity politics into the mainstream. It's talked about a lot more than it has been in the past. Breitbart, which is not necessarily racial, but certainly is some of it, is the most popular right-wing news segment. And certainly, whatever else President Trump has done, he has, in the eyes of the white identity people, legitimated their cause. That is, that it's made it possible for them to come forward, whether he explicitly approves or not, to come forward and to make this part of the political discourse. This is not the old-fashioned KKK, but it's still very much along the line of a kind of white resentment, identity, anti-elite stuff that we have not really seen to this extent in politics for a long time.
We've got to go in just a second, but as we're here in Hawaii and we're watching this happen largely on the mainland, what is it that you think that we can look at in a way or bring to the discussion perhaps that we have not heard from others on the mainland? Does Hawaii have a role in this?
You know what? It's too easy to say that Hawaii would be a model for behaving in another sort of way. That simply is not the case, not because Hawaii... I'm not saying Hawaii has the same kind of issues and the same kind of problems, but the situation here is different. There is no Republican Party. There isn't the kind of active sort of thing. But we really don't have something that we can say that would be anything other than mealy-mouthed about how you should behave.
Well, I bet you get some comments about there is no Republican Party here. Neil, thanks
I've
so very much.
I've said it before.
We'll talk to you again.
Sure.
Neil Milner is a retired professor of political science and contributes to our segment, The Long View.